voice. You never know, you might have to cook for 20 guys someday. You see, you start out with a little bit of oil, and you fry some garlic.
It's
and you throw in some tomatoes, tomato paste, you fry it, you make sure it doesn't stick. And you gotta do a boil, you shove in all your sausage and your meatballs. And a little bit of wine. A little bit of sugar.
Delicious.
And that's my trick.
When the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie, that's amore.
Enough. I'm so sick and tired of hearing you people talk about food, food, food. That's all anybody ever talks about is prosciutto, cheese, and fava beans. I'm drowning here.
Jesus Christ, take it easy.
We're not even engaged yet.
When you're married, you'll understand the importance of fresh produce. Potatoes,
yeah. I eat with gusto, damn your bet, my country, tis of thee. I eat for social progress, I eat for victory.
Delicious.
Stay hungry, stay hungry, stay hungry.
You want some more?
Good evening and welcome to Mouthful, the One Country's Most Delicious Hour. It's Michelle Anna Jordan. How are you doing this evening? Oh, by next Sunday, it's going to be the dreaded daylight savings time. I really wish we would put it back till April because I love this time of year. I love mornings, you know, the sun's rising earlier, everything smells good. It feels leisurely because that happens early. The birds are singing, and then all of a sudden, you know, daylight savings, and you feel like you're running late already. So I love this week, and I love today. Hope you got out to one of your favorite farmers markets. The Sebastopol Farmers Market was just great today. Beautiful, beautiful flowering quince. I went home with a huge bunch. It was just, all in all, a great weekend. We are going to talk this evening about something that happened 25 years ago, and I don't know if I have my history right, but I'm going to try, and our guests will tell me right away if I'm wrong. So I understand it. There was a contest to come up with a word to call New World Bordeaux-style blends. A lot of wines from Europe, of course, are blends, and it's something that, you know, there's always been in California, I think throughout the United States, there's been a real tendency to go by the varietal name. And Bordeaux wines are typically blends of several grapes that we'll be talking about. So there was a contest, and I don't know any of the words except the winning word, which some people say is the most mispronounced word in the entire, you know, canon of winemaking. And that word is, and I hope I'm saying it right, meritage. Rhymes with heritage, right?
Right.
I did it. Yay. And on that note, let me introduce my guests. We have Nova Perel.
That's right.
From assistant winemaker at Dry Creek Vineyard. We have Mitch Cosentino, founder of the Merit, one of the founders of the Meritage Alliance. Great. And then we also have Josh Stein of Stein Family Wines.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Well, thanks to all of you and congratulations on the 25th anniversary. Did I get that very quick history correct?
Yeah, it was 25 years ago that it was a group of vintners called A Group in Search of a Name.
Hmm.
And it was started 25 years ago. It was actually 24 years ago that the first Meritage wine actually made its appearance, and that's at a big public fanfare thing.
I remember
at the top
that.
Of the mark in San Francisco.
Yeah, I didn't go, but I do remember reading about it. Do you recall today any of the other names that were suggested?
Yeah, but I'm not supposed to.
You're not supposed to remember, or you're not supposed to say?
Yeah, we were supposed to forget any of those that were...
But you have one of those really good memories?
Well, I hate to say too much about it.
Uh-huh.
I actually was, Meritage was my second choice.
Uh-huh.
And, but it had the way it was voted on is, first of all, it was a national contest, and there were thousands of entries. I mean, somewhere in the neighborhood of over 5,000, maybe 6,000.
And this was before people could just send off an email or a text.
Yes, this was. Yeah, this was definitely in the by today's standards fairly archaic. It was very easy. I mean, basically, what happens is the competition was open. I forget for what length of time, mm-hmm. but we were receiving entries and they were being culled through as they were going, because there were obvious ones that you just couldn't, had no relevance, or they couldn't, or they, you know, there were mm-hmm. trademark things. There were a lot of different things wrong, and so it was basically pared down to about 10 or 12.
Mm-hmm.
And then what we did is we had a vote. There were about, I think there were probably 10 or 12 of us.
Mm-hmm.
And we voted on positives. Was it a positive name?
Mm-hmm.
And then we voted on, was there negatives to the name?
Mm-hmm.
And then that's how it ended up being. I mean, Meritage had no negatives.
Mm-hmm. Now, Meritage was a new name, was coined. It was,
right.
It's a brand new name.
For this. And a lot of the names actually were coined.
Oh, really? Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. They were, you know, plays off of other things or, you know, different identities and so on that related. You know, Meritage was chosen. I don't know where Meritage came from, because, which is why it's how it's pronounced, because I've always said, so what is your heritage? The base words are merit and age, or, you know, as two typical things. Mm-hmm. You've got a lot there going on, and heritage,
mm-hmm.
and that all of that played in the part of the person who actually invented the name, and he was working at a Lucky's grocery store,
really?
In Foster City.
Wow. And what did he get for winning?
He got one bottle of each Meritage wine made by each producer through the year 2000.
Oh. So he got quite a lot of wine.
It should have been, yeah. Now, of course, there weren't as many Meritage
sure.
members then as there are now. Mm-hmm. There's 200 and, what is it, 60 or 70, I think, or some. And it's, you know, it is worldwide. In the beginning, it was actually going to be, well, California or American.
Well,
actually,
yeah,
American
was,
is what,
oh,
what
I thought
what
it was,
got to
and
be.
I thought it still was American.
No, in fact, there actually is some members. There's at least one member from France. And
really?
Yeah. So, because everybody had the same situation. I mean, you cannot use the word Bordeaux
right.
in any legal description.
Yeah.
Now, well, which some people could confuse a lot of people, because you could call a wine a Burgundy. Which is also a place, but
so
that's because that one was not restricted in the original doctrine that goes back
the
to
the original doctrine. Okay,
right. So whereas Bordeaux was,
mm-hmm.
and so that's how, you know, mm-hmm. that's how some terms like Chablis and Burgundy and all that, which are all regions,
mm-hmm.
and came about, but Bordeaux was never allowed.
And Champagne.
And Champagne, was allowed. And in fact, there
was. Oh, it
still,
was? Oh, because
yeah,
I know they're fighting.
Well,
they always fight about it.
One of your neighbors here in Corbel has continued to call their sparkling wine Champagne.
California Champagne.
I've always wondered about that. I've always wondered if they were just skirting the situation.
No, that's Chianti was allowable, Champagne was mm-hmm. allowable, Burgundy, Chablis,
but now
wine was allowable.
But Beaujolais isn't.
Beaujolais has a different history.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and it gets back to the grape and so on, what people thought of, you know, Gamay Beaujolais was in fact, actually, some of these grape terms are still allowable or usable to identify a grape with in terms of the California state reporting things, but they may not be allowed to be used in other venues like by TTB, like the word Napa Gamay is not Napa Gamay now.
Oh.
So, you know, which also related to a lot of Beaujolais types of wines and right. so on. So there's a lot of differentiation.
Yes.
And there are certain varieties that have more than one allowable name.
Mm-hmm. So back to Meritage.
Mm-hmm.
How long had you – so you all had been together for 20 – no, you were all together 25 years ago, and then a year into your organization, the name Meritage came about.
Had a winning mm-hmm. – had a contest, had a winner, and then mm-hmm. and then put it together.
Mm-hmm. Now, at that point – or at this point, I think we should probably tell listeners – what is it? What is a Bordeaux blend for those who don't know?
Yeah.
Well, a Bordeaux blend, traditionally, if it's from Bordeaux, has five main grape varietals. I think some people maybe, I don't know, Mitch would probably know more about this than me, but there's a sixth, Carmenier or something like that, pronounced something like that, that is probably legitimate in a Bordeaux blend. But a Meritage blend here has those five varietals. They are Cabernet Sauvignon, Merlot, Cab Franc, Malbec, Petit Verdot, and that's five.
That's five.
Right?
Yeah. For the most part, yeah. Carmenere, it can has been allowed, but there was also another seventh one that is hard to identify and to track, a variety that in some areas was called Saint Macaire. Supposedly, Langtree Vineyards had planted all of them at
seven.
Yeah, and then in whites, it's a little bit less clear because of the fact of what we're allowed to call them here versus there, and
mm-hmm.
the U.S. may identify one variety of Sauvignon Blanc and another as Sauvignon Blanc, but it may be slightly different.
Mm-hmm.
Typically, there are two, Semillon and Sauvignon Blanc. Uh-huh. But you will find
Sauvignon Vert.
Sauvignon Vert is allowable, uh-huh. And that has some different identities. There's also Sauvignon Gris.
And Muscat, Sauvignon Muscat too.
Yeah, Sauvignon Muscat is not considered in this country to be any different than Sauvignon Blanc.
Right. Yeah.
Interesting. So I don't.
Clonal selection makes all the difference.
Yeah.
And you got Muscadelle de Bordelaise is uh-huh. what is the classic, but it's also a related variety.
I don't see anywhere near as many Meritage whites as I see Meritage reds.
That's true. There are not too many of them.
Uh-huh.
I make two of them.
You do? Tell us about that.
So I brought one.
Oh, good.
The original wine that I made called The Novelist was actually made in 1982. Mm-hmm. Prior to Meritage, of course, as the poet, which was actually from 1980 vintage, which was the red. That's for my original company, Cosentino Wine.
Mm-hmm.
And I also make and I did bring the just released new vintage of The Novelist.
Oh, great!
Which I still consult for my old company uh-huh. and am involved in. And the Napa wines there, so
Maybe we should try that while we're chatting.
We can do that.
Yes.
We can do that.
One of Mouthful's favorite sounds. Yes, there we
nice.
Are.
Well, don't you think that a lot of the it's just not labeled white Meritage or Meritage Blanc or something like that. A lot of the white Sauvignon Blancs have Semillon and Sauvignon Blanc, but I think that the producers maybe choose not to use
the term.
The term?
Right.
Is that something you run into, Mitch?
Yeah, that's true. But there is somewhat of a
difference.
I like
this. This is
nice. Like this wine here, I actually described this wine. This is actually a change in blend than what we've done in the past a little bit. It's always been between 18 and 37% Semillon.
Uh-huh.
This vintage, because of my work with the wine I do for my new company called Purity, and a couple of vintages of that where I was using about equal parts Sauvignon Blanc and mm-hmm. Semillon, and I know there are others that do that too. I actually upped that with this particular vintage to a 50-50. Hmm. The Semillon was extremely good in 2011. And so I actually – I've always referred to the purity under Pure Cru Winery, which is my other company, as the not Sauvignon Blanc. And so I've kind of adapted that phrase a little bit with the novelist. And even though the wines are different – they are different, even though the blends are similar, because there's a different vinification going on. There are also wines that age extremely well. In fact, I call them red wine drinkers, whites also. Mm-hmm. I've been very fortunate to have, and I have some in my cellar, but when I was in Georgia last fall, a friend of mine who's one of the biggest collectors in the world opened up out of his cellar the 92 and the 93 novelists.
Oh.
And I got to tell you, I knew the 93 was perfect, but I didn't know the 92 was.
Uh-huh. And it was?
And it was. And it was. In fact, nobody would have ever guessed the vintage probably at least 10 years.
Mm-hmm. I've only tasted older whites a couple of times, and I've been really sad. I tasted some of Gary Farrell's. Gary Farrell, the person.
Sure.
He brought out, I think this was in the early 2000s. He brought out like an 87.
87 was a really good
wine. Yeah, and it was really, he brought out an 87. I'm not sure what other ones, but I was amazed. They were quite wonderful.
Yeah.
Why don't we take a little musical break and we'll be right back with more talk about Meritage.
And you're listening to KRCB-FM, Windsor, Santa Rosa. Mouthful, the wine country's most delicious hour.
Okay, just a little musical glitch here. We've got a cue up again. It was just a very loose tie-in, but sometimes that happens. And, you know,
curious if anybody, what is the traditional blending percentages in Bordeaux for
white Bordeaux?
It varies much as it would here. There are several that are majority Semillon. Aubryon Blanc, which is really the wine. I mean, Aubryon Blanc, for example, the 2009 vintage average price in this country, $1,284.95. That's the average.
Wow.
It's
actually the rarest wine in Bordeaux, and it's white. And that is 52, usually around 52 Sauvignon Blanc, 48 Semillon, or when some vintage is 1% Sauvignon Gris, depending on, you know, and that varies a little.
And it's a dry wine?
Oh, yeah. It's very much stylistically along the lines of this one.
No, yeah, I'm glad you asked that because in my limited experience with Semillon, intentionally limited with the California Semillons I've had, it's made the wine off dry. And I'm not a big fan of off-dry wines. I like a white that's really lean and crisp and wet cementy.
Yeah. Well, in the white Meritage wines, they are always that way. They're always dry.
Dry. Good to know.
But they, as they age, they take on a more tropical characteristic to it.
Mm-hmm.
Even my 09 purity has this really almost a little exotic stone fruit characteristic. But the acidity is still there.
Right? Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And that's good to know because for a long time, I mean, up until now, I'd see that, you know, 12%, 18% Semillon, and it's like, no, I think I'll get something else. No. So I will go back to trying them.
Well, it comes down to how the Semillon's been cropped.
Mm-hmm,
right?
Sure.
Particularly in California, much Semillon is kind of overcropped. So you get 5 or 6 tons, or you get someone that's trying to do the exact opposite, and it produces a Semillon that doesn't really taste like Semillon as a result.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you find the right grower, then when you go to make the blend, you end up with a nice complement between the Sauvignon Blanc and the Semillon.
That's really good to know. Tell us a little bit about Stein Family Wines.
Sure. So Stein Family Wines, actually, we're the newest members of the Meritage Alliance. And actually, our newest release is the same-sex Meritage, which we've partnered with Freedom to Marry. It's a national organization.
I have heard about this. I think this is awesome.
Thank you. Yeah, we have kind of worked on this idea of cause wines. And so our whole winery as a whole, we give 5% of everything we sell to the children of wine workers as college scholarship funds. So we kind of have been working now for about 5 years on this idea of using commerce to help out various nonprofit organizations. You know, they're typically tied to revenue streams that aren't very elastic, and so they need ways to kind of help their causes grow.
Mm-hmm.
And so we help them do that. And Freedom to Marry is obviously looking to expand the number of states that legalize marriage for all Americans, mm-hmm. as opposed to whatever their particular choices of who they'd like to be in bed with are. And so the whole idea here was to, well, also to help with the name. Right, we don't have the whole maritage issue doesn't come up because of the
yeah, same
to marriage.
Same-sex maritage. It's just great. But now, one thing I'm really curious about, and I always forget what BATF has become.
TTB.
TTB, okay. I know that it was really hard for a while to get certain things through, like world-famous art sometimes wasn't approved. So how's it going with stuff like this? Is it just going through no problem?
No issues at all. No,
that's great.
I mean, TTB has done a really good job, actually, in changing their whole COLA system in the last 8 months. It used to – I could take 6 months to get a label through, and my average time now is under 2 weeks.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
It makes a big difference because then even if there are objections – and we had a couple problems with some of the language. They got back to us so fast. There was no lag into the printer. There was no issues. Mm-hmm. So that made it much, much easier.
Yeah, they've really trimmed their – they've actually narrowed the scope of approvals, which was only smart to do because it was – you can't – I mean, anybody that's been in the business a long time will have stories of labels that are rejected for the stupidest things you've ever
– Yeah, I've heard some great – somebody should do a book on that, you know? They really should. They should have the label and tell the story.
I can contribute numerous ones.
I think that'd be really interesting. Okay, now we're going to take a musical break. We will be right back.
Hey babe, what's in your eyes? I saw them flashing like airplane lights. You fill my cup, babe, that's for sure. Must come back a little more. You got my heart, you got my soul, you got the silver, you got the gold, you got the diamonds from the mine. Well, that's all right. It'll buy some time. Kitchen door. You
Yeah, it's Rolling Stones evening tonight. I really wanted to play Bonnie Raitt, Me and the Boys. I can't believe it. It's not in the studio. I'll have to have a bunch of guys on again and so I can scratch that itch. We were talking about Meritage, celebrating its the Meritage Association. What's the full name of the association?
What is the full name?
Full name.
The Meritage Alliance.
A Meritage Alliance, not association. They're celebrating
it
their 25th year.
It was in the beginning the Meritage Association.
Oh, okay.
It was changed a few years ago.
Okay, so good. I didn't just pull that out of thin air. And we are talking with Mitch Cosentino. Nova Peril. And Josh Stein. And it's a great conversation and all these beautiful bottles. And I just love this same-sex Meritage. We have to leave this for Outbeat Salon, which is coming up after Mouthful. And it's a nice line drawing. I love it. It's sort of a line drawing.
Right. The idea was to be kind of Keith Haring-esque, right? So mm-hmm. It's this idea of you can see yourself regardless of who you are. And that really is supposed to be the point, is this is about equal rights. It's about mm-hmm. being members of American society and making everybody be equal. And the nice thing here is, who doesn't need wine for an event, right?
Absolutely.
And wine makes events better. And so it's a nice tie-in.
It is. And you know, this, I wouldn't, if I tasted this without knowing what it was, I would not think it was a Meritage.
Yeah, it's very soft. One of the nice things that Meritage allows us to do is the act of blending, right? I mean, mm-hmm. I think one of the things that really kind of gets lost with the emphasis on varietals in the United States is that the whole reason of having all these different ways of putting stuff together is it gives you more options. Mm-hmm. And so with this particular wine, we wanted something that would be softer, more Pinot Noir-esque, more kind of just friendly, not sweet, not off-dry.
Not sweet, yeah. Not off-dry at all. But it's got that silk on satin feel on the palate, which right. is so engaging. Right. And the tannins are quite resolved.
Well, Mitch called. Soft. He said Merlot, and I said Merlot and Cab Franc. That's really what's the main parts of that.
Uh-huh. And Merlot like they used to make it, not like they were making it a decade ago when it was so seems the ones that were entered in competitions. I haven't judged wine in a while.
That's a whole nother conversation.
Oh, God.
Having made Merlot going back to 1980, I have a lot of Merlots, and they were always great Merlots, but unfortunately, there were not a lot of them. There were always about 30 until the world exploded. And the problem is there's still the great 30, and then there's 400, 500 others.
Yeah, I got on a tasting panel once, and it was Merlot's either over $20 or over $30. And it seemed like every winemaker felt obliged to over-extract it. And it was sort of like Brillo pads on your palate. So I had loved Merlot up until that. Anyway, there's still the great 30. And this is it. This is really lovely. It's a very sexy wine.
Thank you.
Very, very sexy wine.
Well, you know, speaking of varietals, I'm wondering if when you guys first got together, was there any talk of maybe excluding a varietal from the traditional Bordeaux or allowing wineries to add one variety or anything like that?
There was never any exclusion. There had been over time discussions whether there could be maybe one other variety allowed in a minority sense, but every time, even though that was considered and thought about, it was always eventually rejected.
Because you're kind of taking a risk, in a sense, hoping that all the varietals are going to do well in California and various appellations where they're being grown, and that winemakers are going to want to play with them. I mean,
well, but you don't have to use them all. That's the thing. You know, you only have to use two. So
to qualify, you have to use two.
Has to be two, and it cannot be more than 90% of any one.
Okay.
And that concept allows, you know, obviously in Bordeaux, they don't have to do. They can do whatever they want.
Sure.
I mean, if you look at Petrus, for example, mm-hmm. Petrus is usually around 95% Merlot.
Mm-hmm.
With a little bit of Cab Franc. Cheval Blanc is primarily Cabernet Franc with a little bit of Merlot. There's no mm-hmm. Cabernet Sauvignon in either one of those, and yet they are two of the greatest wines in the world. Mm-hmm. So there was never any look at that, and as regions have more of one variety in Bordeaux, you've got the ability to make stylistic differences here based on the varieties you want to show first.
Mm-hmm, sure.
Or what maybe makes your style or your character. When it first came out, one of the big publications, who shall remain unnamed, made a big stink about Meritage and a marketing gimmick, and they referenced it's just another way to sell a reserve Cabernet, which couldn't be. First of all, if you needed a reason or a way to market your reserve Cabernet in those days, you had other problems.
Yeah.
And that wasn't the case. Mm-hmm. Never was the case. And the thought process, originally came about, and the whole idea came about because when I made my first Meritage wines, the varietal rules were only 51%.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
And they changed in the mid-80s to 75%. And that's the reason I got on board was really not to anything to do with one of my wines, but it had to do with one of my favorite wines in the past, which was Inglenook Cask Cabernet 1974.
Oh, uh-huh.
Which was, depending on the cask, and I still have a few bottles of that, by the way. I had one not too long ago. It was pretty great.
What did they retail for back then? 12 bucks?
Yeah, about 12 bucks. Yeah. That Inglenook Cask Cabernet was, depending on the cask number, was either 69 or 70% Cabernet, and the balance was Merlot. And it was a remarkable wine, and my whole argument was, if that was the best wine today, in other words, when we were doing it, or mm-hmm. even today now, they had no way of identifying it other than just saying it's red wine. And that's why Meritage really came about.
Yeah.
And even in the white wines, too, I mean, you had the same thing. I mean, you would have to label it Sauvignon Blanc. And for the most part, most of them were labeled that way,
mm-hmm.
even though maybe they had different dimension and different broadness.
Sure.
And Semillon gives the white wines a lot more broadness, and that grows as the wine develops.
Mm-hmm. Now, for a wine novice or someone who hasn't thought about Meritage yet, to see it on the bottle, like here you have same-sex Meritage, and you can tell that it's red. But on this other one, it says The Novelist, and then underneath it says Meritage.
Right.
And I want to bring you in as well, Nova. How does, do you have that proprietary name, like The Novelist, any of them, the different proprietary name, and then underneath that it's identified as Meritage? Is that typically how it's done?
Not all wines are proprietary. I mean, they're not all the Meritage wines are proprietary.
Okay, so what would you...
just saying Meritage.
So they'll just say Meritage.
Meritage.
Oh,
right,
okay.
But then beneath that they will say, even as this one does...
Red wine or red
white wine.
Oh, okay.
Napa white wine. Napa County
okay.
white wine.
But you have The Novelist, then you have Meritage.
Right.
Then you have the red wine.
The Novelist is considered the proprietary or fancy, and the fancy mm-hmm. name, although Meritage from the TTB standpoint is also considered a fanciful identifier. It's not an approved identifier for class and type.
Okay.
And that's the only reason, because it was that we tried to do it originally, and the effort and the work and the attorneys that it was going to take to do it just wasn't worth it. And then you really couldn't control the use of it, whereas you can control, the Alliance can control the use of it at this point.
Right. Nova, let's bring you in, because you've set up a bottle that I can almost read. Is that the Mariner?
The Mariner is the bottle that I brought. I brought a 2007. It's a Meritage. It's got all five of the varietals, and
so we should say that that's Cabernet Sauvignon, Cabernet Franc, Merlot, Petit Verdot, and Carmenere.
No, Malbec.
Malbec. Malbec. That's right. Malbec.
Carmenere is
the sixth.
Is the sixth that
I skipped
people,
over Malbec.
I think it's Yorkville Cellars is the only one that I know the bottles of Carmenere by itself, but.
In this country.
And that's
correct.
The 2007.
This is a 2007 I brought.
Is this from, I would assume this is from the library?
This is from my library.
Okay.
Hopefully I'll get reimbursed from the winery tomorrow. But yeah, it's a 2007. We call it the Mariner. Like Mitch calls his wine the Novelist, or the Poet, I think is one of his.
Right.
The Mariner is our fanciful name,
mm-hmm.
right? So it's a name that
and I know
we
David,
made up.
David Stare. He was really into...
David was one of the original.
Yeah,
really
into sailing, right?
That's correct,
yeah.
So Dry Creek has kind of been at the forefront of the Meritage fight or campaign, mm-hmm. you know, they've been there since the beginning, and, you know, we're very much for it all the way. I mean, it's the idea of using all the tools of Bordeaux, you know, Bordeaux is world famous, rightly so, and we want to use that recipe, in a sense, legitimately, you know. And so Dry Creek does that for a couple of our different wines. We've got the Mariner is our main blend, and then we also have a Meritage that does not have a fanciful name, like you were talking about this. So it's just labeled the Meritage.
And what vintage of the Mariner is available now at the winery? Do we know?
I think it's 09.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so this 07 should be tasting just right.
Mm-hmm. And this is where you taste this. I taste this anyway, and I think this is a Bordeaux blend. This is a Meritage.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it, you know, it was good. It was a pretty good vintage, and this particular vintage had a little bit more Merlot in it than Cabernet. So I think it's perhaps a little softer and velvety, and but given its age, I mean, the tannins have softened up nicely, mm-hmm. I think, anyways. So I think it's pretty ready to drink now, mm-hmm. and probably will be for the next couple of years.
Mitch, I have to come back to you. The poet, the novelist, talk to me about that.
Well, when I started the winery, I was more worried about my name being mispronounced and misspelled, which it...
Cosentino?
Yeah, it was... Oh, everybody wanted to inject another N in there.
Oh.
And turn it into a more Greek-sounding Constantino or something like that. The original wines were called Crystal Valley Cellars. The company was Crystal Valley Cellars / Cosentino Wine Company. Mm-hmm. And the more Eurocentric wines, which were four wines, I called the Rare Art Series, and they were named after artists of which that artist worked toward their medium related to the winemaking aspect of that wine individually. And the poet and the novelist were the two Meritage wines. I also did a Chardonnay called The Sculptor that was very, very French Meursault-like. Mm-hmm. And a Cabernet that was different than the Cabernet that was called the Winemaster, because most winemakers are judged by Cabernet first. Mm-hmm. And if you don't make Cabernet first, then you have to fall into another deal, and it's not fair, but that's what happens.
Mm-hmm.
So
is that still happening today?
Oh yeah.
If you don't make cab, you're not really seen. You're not seen as having the same kind of presence.
You don't have the heft.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's kind of a problem, because when they evaluate vintages,
mm-hmm.
they usually evaluate it based on Cabernet. I don't care what you make or where you're at. In California, if you're making Pinot Noir in Monterey, upstate New York are going to say, "Oh, but that vintage wasn't a very good vintage, so was it?"
But it's based primarily on Cabernet.
The concept, the idea is based. I mean, there are individual varieties that are rated individually, mm-hmm. but the perception is usually on Cabernet from California, and which usually means Napa and Sonoma.
Sonoma, yeah. And, why? Why are we at that? Because
people think that's the king grape, and that's what gets the most attention, and that's what happens.
Is there a reason for that? I mean,
that's what they buy.
But, I mean, can we trace that back?
Well, there was the jug wines, right, which identified by region.
Hardy Burgundy.
And so then when your generation started to come of age and they were buying wines, the whole point was not to be buying the jug wine, right? Mm-hmm. So the varietally labeled wine was seen as being better than the jug. Unfortunately, blending, that's why the Europeans have been blending for mm-hmm. many hundreds of years, right? You get a better product when you blend.
I love Joe Rocchioli's story about his great Pinot Noir going into Hardy Burgundy blends.
Right. Right. That's what would sell.
Yeah.
Right? And so, I mean, I ran into this myself. My first whites were Gewurz. My first reds was Tempranillo. Nobody wanted, great, but do you have a cab? Do you have a Chardonnay? Right? I mean, it's like these are the things that Americans see as being, this is how you sort of show you've kind of come of age as a producer. And if you don't make them, you're not really taken as seriously.
And do we find that in most wine publications as well?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
As I mean, much I'm, as they,
I'm so off the grid in the way, because I mean, I write a weekly wine column, and I don't get to choose the wine that I write about. Someone else does, because they do a wine of the week contest or tasting, and but then that wine comes to me. But I don't have to follow anything. You know, I can judge that wine based on anything I want to at all.
Well, it's amazing when you go around, if you're pouring the wine, and I've been at events where I'll pour a red and white, and the white will be a white Meritage many times because it's more unique and different than other things that people may be pouring. And people will come around, oh, yeah, I want the, I'll have a little of that Chardonnay because they see it's white. It's a mindset. It's like when people used to go to a restaurant, they would always ask for the Chablis. Well, that just meant it was the white wine. You know, they weren't buying Chablis. Chablis is a very complex white wine made in the Chablis region of Burgundy, and try to tell people that it's white wine made in a red area. No, it's Chablis is a region in Burgundy. Burgundy is a region in France. Anyway, so and they still do. I mean, I'll be pouring the. Oh yeah, which one of the Chardonnays did I have? It was you had a white Meritage wine, and you had Chardonnay. So
well, maybe it's only a matter of time then, till people get the training they need to understand that Cabernet is not always king. And just like the jug wines, people have pointed out that, okay, jug wines are just a blend, and people have gotten more sophisticated in their palates. Hopefully, people will be able to understand that there's more to a vintage than just how the Cabernet in Napa Valley did.
Like Cabernet is like having your old college professor or your grandfather or great-grandfather over for dinner. And if you're lucky, he's sort of got a style of Cary Grant, and he wears a nice suit and everything's pressed. But life would be really difficult if you had him over for dinner every night.
Well, especially if you're drinking Cabernet, because Cabernet by itself, for the most part, is probably the least food-friendly wine.
I agree. Yes.
I mean, it is. Well, I think it's beef, steak, buffalo. It'll go with lamb, but Cabernet Franc's better with
the
lamb.
I think there's one wine that's harder. I think that the least friendly wine I know is Chardonnay. California Chardonnay is friendly.
Right. No, you have to drink mine then.
Okay.
Trust me.
No,
but
okay.
That's the problem. I get into the same defensive mechanism because I'm a winemaker who really enjoys Chardonnay, but it's got to have Burgundy balance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's one I really like. And I've never tasted yours. David Munsgard, I think, the winemaker at Iron Horse Vineyards. His unoaked Chardonnay is really quite nice.
Well, if it's from Green Valley and they're probably, it's got great acidity.
Yeah. And Miramar Torres is also doing an unoaked Chardonnay.
There really is a world of them out there, and there's a lot of people changing that direction.
But that oaky, buttery Chardonnay that so many people, very well-known winemakers, loved, it's very limited in what you can drink with it and what you can eat with it.
Let me explain something to you. When I was in Burgundy in 2008, I was treated like a king there. And because they asked me to bring some wine over. I sent some wine over. And they had I had the same balance that they had.
Uh-huh.
I was using old clones, primarily Meursault clones. And the thing is, what they appreciated was, one is that it wasn't still in barrels. Two is, I do not inoculate my white wines for malolactic. Because I got
bless
the same.
You.
I got
bless
the,
you.
Now, in Burgundy, they do because they have to. Uh-huh. And their natural acidity is much higher. We get the same balance as they do. And as a result, the wines will age longer. So,
and, you know, it's been a while since I had any Meursault, but I've always enjoyed Meursault.
Yeah. You would, just by your description, I could tell it. Yeah.
So what are we drinking, Josh?
So this is our 2010 Arlena Napa Valley Red Table Wine, and we didn't call this Meritage on the label because we had the same-sex Meritage, and we wanted to make a distinction. But it kind of feeds into what we were talking about here, which is that there are wines that are to go with food, and there are wines that essentially are replacing food. Right? And so the big buttery Chardonnay, you don't want with food. You want that by itself. But the all steel shard that we release, for example, mm-hmm. I make one too. If I try to pour that, if I try to pour that for someone who wants something where it's a wine by itself, they're not going to like the all steel shard because the very things we're looking for to pair with food, the mm-hmm. higher acidity, the minerality, mm-hmm. the kind of perfuminess, that's not what someone wants if they want that wine to be able to stand on its own. And so in the same kind of way, a big hoary cab by itself, that's a meal, right? That's like a whole course of a meal by itself. But to blend, when you add Merlot mm-hmm. and Cab Franc, you create something that's softer that lets you bring some of the acids back in. And so that's what the Arlena is mm-hmm. in this case. It's designed – we called it a red table wine for that reason. Most of the red blends in Napa are just called red wine, as if there's something wrong with calling it red table wine, right? But we wanted to emphasize we want this to go with food. Mm-hmm. And
well,
that's the point.
There is one legal problem with red table wine is it's the alcohol level.
Right.
If you're over 14, you cannot use the word table.
Oh, really?
Yeah. If you're under 14, uh-huh. you can. So
that's good to know. I did not know that.
Yeah. Of course, if you're over 14% on a red blend, you're not going to go so well with food.
No, you're
anyway,
not.
It just depends.
Some, you know, that's so depends that, on the region and yeah. and whether they show the heat. Yeah.
And that's you know, one thing I'm wondering about. Have y'all had to deal with increasing alcohol levels?
Well, I think it's a part of nature.
Yeah.
It's not just the way you pick it. I mean,
no, it has to do with
you're dealing
warming.
With, well, you're dealing with a lot more efficient yeasts too.
Uh-huh.
I can go back and look at wines that vinification and picking were very, very similar, and in a 10-year span, the alcohols may be 0.5% higher.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's also trellising the fact that vines are healthier. So what used to kind of take away from a lot of the vigor
uh-huh.
was all these various vine diseases. And, I mean, yes, we're replanting now in Napa uh-huh. and those kind of things, but you have vines that have gotten a good 25 to 30-year lifespan,
mm-hmm.
and they've gotten that way in a far healthier condition than mm-hmm. previous generations of vines would
oh,
have
interesting.
Done. Right? So you're getting grapes that have higher Brix levels to begin with, and then you mm-hmm. have yeast that have been engineered and bred for higher yields,
mm-hmm.
and the whole tried and true 0.55, which we used to use as our multiplier. Take the Brix times 0.55, and that's how you'd roughly end up with your alcohol.
Oh,
you cannot
not
trust
do that.
That
anymore.
It's closer to 6.
Yeah, 0.6, okay. 0.61. You know, yeah. you never know what you're going to end up with, unfortunately.
So we've got another wine to try.
Yeah, what I brought the poet was and let me give you a little bit of a background. The poet was the original Meritage. It was used for the trademarking of the term, and it was used at the announcement. It was a 1986, and it came out in February of 1989. About 2 to 3 months later, both Dry Creek and Franciscan released their Meritage wines. Mm. They were 85s. So there was some confusion where people said, well, I mean, you know, the first one was the poet because if you didn't know that, you weren't there. You know, it was the one that they did because we had to do this special thing for the attorneys and all that. But there we go. So anyway, I didn't bring the poet. I actually didn't have a – I could have brought one of the older – I could bring the 86 actually, the first one. But there's not too many of those. I don't open them very often.
Yeah, I can
so
understand that.
But in 1988, I developed this wine called MCAS, which became kind of a playoff of my signature. It originally didn't be – it wasn't that. It was actually CAS Napa Valley, which was kind of my nickname. And that was actually because some people encouraged me to do that. Interestingly enough, it gained a lot of attention when Costa Esternal, one of the famous second growths from Bordeaux, sued me over the CAS Napa Valley or COS Napa Valley. Theirs was Costa Esternal, although they never sued their neighbor Costa Loberie, nor did they go after an Italian winery that also had the COS. But it was great for us, in fact.
A lot of attention.
Yeah. In fact, Robert Mondavi told me, he says, this is the greatest thing that will ever happen to you.
Yeah.
Says, you can't believe the attention this is going to get. And it got huge attention. But
uh-huh.
In the end, we ended up changing it to a play off my signature and script, which was before it was block letter. Anyway, so MCAS became MCAS, and we actually preferred that in the end.
Mm-hmm.
And
I like the look of it.
Yeah,
a very nice look.
It was this was always a product of Cosentino through, well, through the 2006 vintage. Mm-hmm. There is no 7 or 8. This is 2009. This is the first one, and now it's a product of a new company, Pure Cru. But so it's my Red Meritage wine at Pure Cru, and the poet is the Red Meritage wine, of course, of Cosentino Winery.
Cosentino.
Yeah.
For the novice who is intrigued by what they've heard tonight, it's the best way to go out and start trying Meritage.
Start by going out and trying Meritage.
Where? Go right. Buy some at your local wine shop, go to a winery, go to your websites. What do you think?
I would say certainly in my back area, the Silverado Trail, almost every winery in Napa makes a red blend, whether they identify it as a Meritage or not.
Mm-hmm.
Pick every place you've never heard of before and pull in, and you'll find a whole bunch of bottlings you've never tasted before and a whole wide gamut of different styles.
Mm-hmm. And when you're at restaurants, don't be afraid to look for the Meritage wines as opposed to a Cabernet, because you're going to find that it's going to be much more versatile.
You're going to find many Meritage whites in restaurants as well?
Not a lot, but you will find a few.
Some?
Yeah.
Because that's intriguing me.
There's probably around, well, there's about 7 or 8.
Okay.
On a regular basis.
Okay.
You know?
Because you're shaking your head, Josh.
It's just very hard. Sauvignon Blanc, or a more perfumey Sauvignon Blanc, mm-hmm. may have something as part of the blend, mm-hmm. but very rarely do you even see them identified on lists unless yeah. they're European.
You can look if you're going to your favorite retailer, you can always look in selections too, but ask. Mm-hmm. Doesn't hurt to ask.
I mean, yeah, you can
on
ask.
Any of these wines and anywhere you're at. And obviously, you can go online. We all have that. We yep. do a lot that way.
Yeah.
Visit the taste rooms and ask for these things.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's an interesting, because there's the five varietals that go into the blend are oftentimes not hard to find bottled by themselves. Malbec, Petit Verdot, right. even Cab Franc. So, you know, for me, it's really interesting to taste those varietals on their own to get a feel for what they do, right? So,
sure.
So you say, oh, well, Malbec is very, very fruit-forward and very soft and pleasant and yada, yada, yada about the other ones. Petit Verdot, very dark and tannic, very almost inky. So get to know the varietal by itself mm-hmm. and then see what it can do when they're all put together. I mean, some people would argue that, you know, the sum of the parts is greater. The old cliche is some of the parts is greater than the individuals, and a lot of times that's true.
Yeah.
But starting with the foundation of the varietals mm-hmm. is a recommendation mm-hmm. that I would make.
But just don't get stuck there. I guess one of the things we want to say is don't be afraid of blends.
Definitely
yeah,
not.
Right.
Don't be afraid of blends.
Well, at the end of the day, don't be afraid to try things.
Yeah.
I mean,
even if you can't pronounce it, I think for Americans, that's one of the really big hurdles. Mm-hmm. They are afraid to order something on a menu that they can't pronounce.
There was a study done within the last couple of months. People expect the harder it is to pronounce, the more expensive it is.
Oh, interesting.
And obviously, the more expensive it is, the better it must be. And of course, that's absolutely
not
the case.
Not true at all.
But people don't trust their mouths.
Yeah.
The first thing you find out when you end up on our side of the tasting bar, people really do not believe what it is they're actually tasting.
Yeah.
But if they're going to buy a car and the car doesn't work for them, they don't feel bad because their body doesn't fit right. And you wouldn't allow yourself to feel bad.
It's a very good point.
And yet when you're in the tasting bar, you must be told the right way. You've known your mouth your whole life. Enjoy what you like and try different things until you find something that you enjoy.
Yeah.
Yeah. And when you're doing, you know, doing public tasting, I'm always telling people, so, well, really, I don't know if I want to try that. And I go, well, this is a tasting.
Why
never had it before?
The idea behind a tasting, everybody's got a spit bucket, you got to taste. It's to taste wines, open yourself up to experiences.
Yes.
That's
absolutely.
The fun part. Let me tell you this. I'm a winemaker. A lot of winemakers got into it by enjoying wine. I have a 12,000 bottle cellar of other people's wines. Now, for a winemaker, that's probably insane. But you know, that's my issue. But
you
I enjoy
wine.
Great wines yeah. from everywhere. Yeah. And it's very hard to find varieties that I don't have in my cellar.
And on that note, we are out of time here on Mouthful. Just enough time to tell people if they want information about the Meritage Alliance, they can go to meritagealliance.org or .com.
.org.
Yeah. And if that fails, just go to Google.
Yes.
Or Dogpile. I think Dogpile still exists. On that note, thank you so much. Nova Perel, assistant winemaker at Dry Creek Winery. Mitch Cosentino, with such a long bio, it is an honor to have you here. And Seth Stein of Stein Family Wines. One last thing real quickly. We did talk about prices. Same-sex Meritage. Price points.
$25.
Arlena?
$59.
MCOS?
MCOS, $125.
And the novelist?
Novelist is about $20 or $22.
Okay. And Mariner.
I think the current vintage, I think, is up 45 to 50.
45. Well, thank you, gentlemen, for opening these lovely wines and sharing them with me and really with all the listeners. And thanks for you for sticking with us here on Mouthful. I'll see you next week for another yummy episode of Mouthful, the wine country's most delicious hour. Have a great week.
This story, well, children, it is plain but true. God knows if a preacher preaches long enough.
Mouthful, the wine country's most delicious hour, is produced and hosted by Michelle Anna Jordan, who also selects Mouthful's music. Live episodes are engineered by Michael Young and occasionally by Mary Moore Campagna. Mark Fuller is Mouthful's recording and post-production engineer. Podcasts are available at iTunes and krcb.org. For more information, to suggest a guest, and to find out how to be a guest yourself, email catsmilk@sonic.net or send a message via Mouthful's Facebook page.
Time for dinner now.